Hi, this is Dr. Kimberly Leonard, author of Visualizing Happiness in Every Area of Your Life and host of this podcast, Incredible Life Creator. And today I have Sterling Hawkins on the podcast. Sterling Hawkins is an author, investor, and entrepreneur, but most importantly, he is a keynote speaker and founder of No Matter What Movement. He shows people how to achieve the results they want regardless of the circumstances. Sterling knows it works because he has used it to invest and grow over 50 companies. Sterling has taken that experience to work with C-level teams and speak on stages around the world. He has even been seen in fancy magazines like Inc. Magazine, Fast Company, The New York Times, and Forbes. It turns out that getting results comes down to pushing past your comfort zone and limiting beliefs, something Sterling practices regularly by pushing his own boundaries through skydiving, century bike riding, shark diving, and even trekking the Sahara. Wow. Welcome to the podcast, Sterling.
Thank you, Kimberly, and thank you for the generous introduction. I think it sounds a lot better than maybe it feels on a day-to-day basis.
Well, those sounds like some pretty exciting things. I don't know about the shark diving.
It's crazy. I got a story for you about shark diving at the appropriate time, but really appreciate you having me on and excited to dive in.
Yeah, so just so people can get to know you, tell us about you, how you started out, and how you got to be doing what you're doing now.
As you said, I'm speaking and working with companies all over the world around how to push beyond their limiting beliefs to achieve breakthrough results. However, people and companies define that is what I mean by it. And funny enough, I got into it because speaking in public was the thing that scared me most in life. Like everybody has their thing, but I think many of us are just terrified to speak in public. It's like that Seinfeld joke, I'd rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy. Me, that was me down to a T. And I got pretty lucky early in my career. I grew up a fifth generation retailer in my family's grocery store. And I started a software company with my dad right out of college that we sold to this group in Silicon Valley, where it became part of this like Apple Pay before Apple Pay. And it was like living a scene out of The Wolf of Wall Street, Kimberly. It was like models in the office, parties at the Four Seasons. We raised hundreds of millions of dollars, multi-billion dollar valuation. And I thought, hey, I've got this thing figured out. I've got life figured out, business figured out. It's only a matter of time until I crown myself the next Steve Jobs and, spin off companies and buy islands and take private jets and all those things. And maybe needless to say, it didn't work out exactly that way. When the housing market collapsed, 2008 to 2010, somewhere in there, our funding dried up. We didn't have enough organic growth to support the 700 people that we had. And the entire company, all $500 million of cash we had raised, gone, bankrupt. And it wasn't just the company that crashed. I crashed at a personal level. My whole identity was caught up in this thing. And what I thought success was, how I thought business was conducted, who I thought I was all so tied up into that company that I end up playing out a sad country song of a story, 6 figures of personal debt, moving into my parents' house. Even my girlfriend broke up with me. Like I hit every single beat of that song. And it was in those dark moments that I made this declaration to myself that I'm not going to shrink from these challenges any longer. I had done it enough. I'm not going to run from my fears anymore. I'm going to go after them no matter what. And my first thing on the list was public speaking. And it grew from there. It's wild to think about. I still can't believe it's happened.
Wow. So tell me about the first time you did your public speaking.
Oh, well, so imagine, like, picture me bottomed out at my parents' house. And this thing my mom said came back to me. My mom, she's got all these great sayings she said when I was a kid. She still has them, by the way. And the one that came back to me was actually a Robert Frost quote, "The way out is through." You heard that one before?
I've heard that one.
Yeah. Of all the things she said, like that came back to me. And I was like, okay, well, if the way out is through, That means I've got to go through my fears, through my embarrassments, through like all of that stuff. And what I'm looking for is on the other side. And I didn't have anything to lose. So I was like, all right, Mom, let's put this thing to the test. And I remember as I'm having this epiphany, my email dings, and it's just junk mail from this conference in Singapore. I'm sure you and all of your listeners get like hundreds of junk mail conferences every day. And this one happened to be a conference in Singapore. And so I hit reply and I wrote, "Why don't you have me speak? Best, Sterling." And I, crazy, right? And I don't know, like the stars aligned, the clouds opened up, the God smiled upon me. I don't know what it was. But that conference director got back to me. I end up talking to him. And it must have been one of these cases where I've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain, because I kid you not, I talk him into being not a breakout speaker, but the keynote speaker of his whole event in Singapore. Crazy, right? And it didn't become real until he sent me the legal agreement. And I'm thinking, I don't know what I'm going to say. I've got this huge failure on my resume and I'm terrified to do it. But what I did is, I think what we all need to do in the face of big challenges like that, or even big fears like that, which is I committed in a way where there was no going back. I call it get a tattoo. And I did that by signing his legal agreement and sending it back to him. And I was locked in, right? And what's important in that is that your commitment, in this case, my commitment, was bigger than my discomfort. Even if I didn't feel like it, even if I was feeling a little queasy leading into it, I had signed this legal agreement, and that was enough that kind of forced me into it. And I was terrified, Karen Billy. I remember I wasn't sleeping weeks ahead of the thing. I wasn't eating. I wasn't breathing. I was having panic attacks. I was breathing, but not well. I would be like have these experiences where like I just had a very short breath and I was scared and I was worried. I'm like, what are you, insane, Sterling? You can't do this. And I gave that talk in Singapore. It's a good thing I practiced, because I think I blacked out. I don't remember giving it. I thought I bombed, actually. I'm trying to like hide myself going off the stage, and the conference director catches up with me and he's like, "Sterling, that's one of the best talks I've seen." I still don't think he was in the same talk that I gave. I think he just wanted to say something nice to me, you know, like, "Oh, here's this poor kid. He came all the way from the US. Like, just give him a compliment." But he did go on to put me in touch with all of his conference director friends. And it was only then I was like, hey, there's a career here. There's a pathway here. There's an opportunity here. My mom was right. The way out is through. I just need to go through no matter what.
Wow. Exciting. Yeah. You made it through. You didn't, even though you said you don't remember it, at least you went up there. You stood up there. You didn't faint. You didn't.
Yeah. I survived. Nobody threw rotten tomatoes at me. And that's usually the case, right? Like those things that we're afraid of, worried about, embarrassed about, any of those things, like how it exists in our mind is often not correlated to a real reality of what can happen. I think about it as like there's a difference between danger, like real danger, and just experiencing discomfort. Danger is something you should avoid, you should manage. Like real risk needs to be taken care of and considered very seriously, personally, financially, in the physical sense, emotional sense, spiritual sense, any sense, right? But discomfort, those feelings of uneasiness, fear, anger, maybe even grief, are not always correlated with what's actually happening. And as we can create a distinction between those two things, we can much more powerfully step into the results that we want to achieve and break through some of those limiting beliefs that are holding us back.
I wanted to ask you about preparation. So for that speech, you know, you had to prepare. And then
I did.
You're going to go into a shark tank. You have to prepare. If you're going to go skydiving, you have to prepare. So how important is preparation? How do we get our minds ready? But also for in the speech situation, you had to make sure you knew what you were going to say when you got up there.
Yeah. Well, a couple thoughts about this. First, I think it's important to surround yourself with people that are going to set you up for success. And I did this just kind of intuitively initially, and now I backed it up with all sorts of research and case studies and client work and philosophy and brain science. And it turns out that there's really four kinds of people that we need to be surrounded by on a somewhat regular basis. The first is you need some level of accountability. Now, I signed that legal agreement, so I was accountable for that, but that was 3 or 4 months away. I needed somebody to be with me day in and day out, or at least on a weekly basis, to kind of hold me accountable to benchmarks or the places that I wanted to have checkpoints at along the way. For me, luckily, my sister was right out of Georgetown University with a marketing degree. And I call her up. I'm like, you know, I bottomed out. Will you help me? And she said, you're an idiot, Sterling, of course, but I'm coming to Singapore with you. And she really became somebody that held me accountable, which was especially important on those days when I didn't want to get out of bed. Research shows that when you are personally accountable for a specific thing at a specific time with a specific deliverable, you're 95% more likely to achieve that goal. 95%. It's almost like if you want to achieve that thing, find somebody, anybody that's going to be able to hold you accountable for it. So accountability is one crucial thing. I think you also need somebody that's going to provide some level of inspiration, kind of light that fire inside of you, or maybe better said, reconnect you to that fire inside of you. You need somebody that has a level of mentorship. They've been down the path that you've gone down and or you're going down, and they can maybe make connections, recommendations. They can give you some of that tactical feedback that I wouldn't know, none of us would know before stepping into some of those new things. And finally, maybe most importantly, is you need love. Not in the romantic sense, but love in terms of somebody outside of yourself that can remind you that they accept you exactly how you are and exactly as you're not. You know, when you're going through that discomfort, you kind of lose sight. Many of us lose sight of who we are, what we're capable of, where we're going, why we're going there to begin with. And when you outsource that, even for a little while, during those difficult moments, that's what's going to remind you who you are and keep you moving through any of those uncomfortable moments. Those four roles, I call it your street gang, right? Not because I'm suggesting anybody do anything unlawful, but because they're really going to be the group of people that's committed more to your success, where you want to go, over your discomfort, any uncomfortable feelings along the way.
Right. So when people are going out and they're looking for their street gang, if you will.
Yeah.
Is it best to always be with people who have the same goals as you, or can it just be anyone that's supportive of you?
Well, I think it's most important to have somebody. Yeah, there's somebody. We've got a thing called the No Matter What community, which are people from all over the world who declare new goals, big and small, and hunt the discomfort necessary to achieve them. And somebody that joined several months ago emailed me about their street gang, who they were thinking, how they were inviting them. And then she just emailed me the other day and is like, hey, well, I couldn't do this and I can't do that and I haven't made the invitation here. And I'm like, 3 months have gone by, right? If those people aren't the right people, find somebody else. There are many people in the No Matter What community that support each other. You could walk down the street and find somebody. Could be a coworker, could be a friend, a significant other. But most importantly is have somebody filling those roles for you. And don't do it, at least my suggestion would be, don't just assume those people are filling those roles. I would invite them to a Zoom meeting or a coffee or a lunch. I would share with them some of the things that you're uncomfortable about, share with them what you're committed to, and ask for their support. And if they agree, that's where you invite them to be in your street gang. And nobody has to make it weird. Just tell them Sterling sent you, right? But making it very clear, very defined, having some, not just an initial conversation, but conversation about the structure of support. Hey, we're going to meet once a week, once a month, whatever that looks like. So there's some level of expectation around it. And it doesn't always have to be both ways, it could just be, Kimberly, you're going to hold me accountable, and that's that. And, you know, maybe we hold each other both accountable. It works that way too.
Yeah. So we're talking about goals or going into the discomfort of something. Yeah. And there's so many theories out there about how to set goals. Some people say set an attainable goal, and other people say just set an impossible goal. You know,
yeah,
there's the gamut. So if you're setting something, yeah, obviously you want to be able to accomplish it. So
sure.
What is your advice on setting goals?
I almost look at it the other way. You know, I think what we view as attainable, mm-hmm, is limited by whatever limited beliefs that we're holding. Beliefs about ourselves, others, the world, how things work, right? Like, oh, I've got this personality and that will never work over here. Or I'm uncomfortable making cold calls. I'll never be able to do that, right? So our goals are oftentimes just overshadowed and robbed by the discomfort that's in the way. Mm-hmm. What I would do is do something that kind of breaks your comfort zone in some meaningful way. You could go shark diving if you want. That did it for me for sure. You could go skydiving. You could run a marathon. You could sign up for a dance class if you've never danced before, or make a phone call to somebody that you haven't talked to in a decade. Something that kind of shakes you up a little bit, steps you even in a small way into a place of discomfort. And on the other side of that, that's when I would look newly at what is it that you're committed to? And have you been selling yourself short prior? Like, is it a bigger goal than maybe you're even willing to admit to yourself? And you only see those things once you get the discomfort, the limiting beliefs out of the way. So I kind of answer your question, but in a backwards way.
Yeah, you answered it. So talk about ambiguity, uncertainty, because whenever we're stepping into something new, there's a lot of that. And people, yeah, a lot of times are afraid to move into that.
Yeah, totally. And what's most interesting to me about that is that it's a little bit of a facade. You know, we look at this new career or new goal or new relationship as like, oh, that's the unknown. Like, I got to get myself ready for that. And it's true. It is the unknown. But at a more fundamental level, tomorrow is not promised to any of us, mm-hmm, at any level. We can never know exactly what's coming next. And quite literally, every new second is the unknown and you're moving into it. And I think one of the best ways to deal with that is to get comfortable with that unknown. I call it hunting discomforts, the name of my book, right? Go after some of those uncomfortable things because you'll find new parts of yourself there, parts that maybe you've walled off, you've avoided, you've denied, maybe you just survived a difficult time as a childhood, sometime in your career, maybe it was more recently with the pandemic, mm-hmm, right? As we go into those moments, usually corresponding with some physical experience, right? Going to a dance class, making a phone call, we're going to be able to understand that unknown, or maybe better said, understand ourselves as we move into that unknown naturally in a different way. You know, I started all this like skydiving, shark diving, marathon running, Sahara trekking. I didn't do it because I'm some adventure junkie. It's quite the opposite. I'm not. Every single one of those things scares me in new and profound ways. But what I found is some research, like we've all experienced physical discomfort before, right? You've stubbed your toe, or emotional discomfort. Maybe a deal doesn't go the way you want it to go, or a relationship falls out when you didn't want it to. It turns out physical, mental, emotional, the brain and body process it almost identically. The research is at a University of Michigan, and it's so close. You can take Tylenol, acetaminophen, and it will help you with emotional pain. Like, that's how closely those uncomfortable discomfort circuits are running. Now, to be clear, I'm not a doctor, and that's not a biohack. I don't suggest anybody do that. But what I do suggest to step more powerfully into that unknown is to find discomfort in any form it comes in. Physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. And the more you do that, the more you'll be prepared to engage with that unknown and not know what's there, but build yourself in a capacity to be ready for anything that is.
Oh, that's kind of exciting, actually.
Right? So much possibility in that.
Yeah, that actually, that really hit me, that what you just said. So,
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think we get so bogged down by limited views of the world, starting with ourselves. I'm not capable of that. My personality is not right for this other thing. I can't go there. I've been hurt there before. I'm not going to be burned again. I hear that one a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some real information to take from those experiences. But when that starts to color our view of what's possible, it becomes very limiting. It's like you're putting on more and more blinders, and all of a sudden there's this little tiny possibility. And that's really not exciting for anybody. Like, oh, I'm going to grow by 3% next year. Great. I'm not diminishing that. Mm-hmm. That's not super inspiring to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
When they can transform their beliefs about themselves by going after those limiting beliefs, by going after discomfort, you're right. Like, it's moving. It's inspiring. It connects people, reminds people with who they really are again. And that to me is the most beautiful thing. That's why I do what I do.
Yeah. And I was thinking, this week I did something new for the first time.
Yeah.
I made an appointment to go into this cryo chamber. So you go in and your whole body is just frozen. Like,
yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I was thinking about that, kind of worrying about it all week, thinking, oh, can I handle, and it's only 4 minutes. Can I handle being in there 4 minutes? Because I remember going into a spa and jumping into cold ice water and going, I could hardly stay in there. And I went and did this and all that worrying and thinking about it. And I'm like, oh, this was a breeze. You know?
Yeah.
This was a breeze.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on.
Hard at all.
Yeah. And when you came out, maybe you noticed it, maybe you didn't. It's fine either way. But did you kind of see yourself in a little bit of a new light? Like, hey, I did that.
Yes. Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the case for all of us. And the more that we can distinguish those moments and say, hey, I made that phone call. I stepped into that cold chamber. I did whatever it was that I was fearful of. That's going to build a real courage and confidence. Not one based on circumstances, not based on your relationships, your bank account, your business side or anything else, but one based only on you. And that's where real confidence comes from. I love it. I've been to some of those cryo chambers. It is a little bit uncomfortable. It's not as bad as I thought, but it does take something.
Yeah, it's pretty cold.
Yeah, totally.
I was thinking, so if when I made that appointment and I started thinking about all these things up until the time where I actually had the experience, what could I have done to change my mindset the week before so I didn't have so many of those thoughts coming up? Is there things that you do to get yourself prepared, especially with some of those bigger things?
Well, two things. One is you get better at it, right? It's that discomfort muscle. The more you meet discomfort anywhere, the better you get at it everywhere. You go to the gym to build your biceps, you hunt discomfort to build your courage, your breakthrough results, your capacity to step into that unknown. So I've done a lot of that. So I've gotten much more comfortable moving into some of those things. But secondly, is that I've noticed that whenever I'm really sinking into some of those limiting beliefs, like, oh, this is going to go terribly. Oh, I'm going to totally bomb. I'm going to fail. This is not going to work out. See, it didn't work again. Mm-hmm. I start to notice that my physicality kind of starts to shrink and my shoulders start to hunch and my back kind of starts to come over. Tony Robbins, by the way, has some amazingly smart things to say about that. But our physicality is connected to the thoughts that we're having. And so when I'm starting to sink into some of those moments, I move. I go to the gym. I get up and do jumping jacks. In a lot of my keynotes, I'll have people stand up towards the end because sometimes you literally have to very physically shake off that discomfort. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it looks crazy. Like, if somebody had a camera in my office here, they'd see me like shaking myself. They'd be like, what is wrong with this person? But it does help. And you do get more comfortable doing it.
That makes sense. Actually, I started something new a couple weeks ago. So every day at lunch, I go and I walk. And I've been having some trouble with my knees and my hips. And I learned that if you walk backwards, it strengthens your knees. So now instead of going to the park and walking on the path straight,
There you
I'm
go.
walking backwards. And I'm sure it looks really, really funny, but I'm like, you know, and it feels really different. And it makes me more actually aware of what's around me.
Oh, that's cool. I'm gonna have to try that. And that's like a discomfort builder right there. I'm thinking myself, like, oh yeah, that would feel a little weird if I walk around the park or down the street backwards, right? There's a little bit of like self-consciousness or almost vulnerability involved in it.
Well,
And
there is.
that,
There's a bunch of people there, you know.
right. They're like, I'm walking backwards, I look weird. But yeah, like all those moments, whether you choose them like that or they choose you, like I'm thrown into this uncomfortable position, you know, somebody calls me out in a meeting. All of them you can, and I would suggest you do use to kind of build that discomfort muscle, like open to it versus closing and shrinking away from it.
Exactly. So I like to kind of switch gears into business and how you work with businesses. I know you go and speak to them, but I think you're also helping grow businesses. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's really based on a lot of the research and the work that I've done, which is a lot of the information is on Google and YouTube and countless books around how to grow a business. Right? It was a little bit weird to me. I was like, wait a minute. Everybody in theory has access to a lot of really great information. What's missing? Right? Like there must be something missing for me and for all of us. And I started to ask this question about myself, right? Like we had all this money, all this technology, all these really smart people. Everybody was working really hard and we failed. Why? And what I discovered is that it was an inability or unwillingness to deal with discomfort, which is what I work with leadership teams of companies to do. Discomfort works for companies and individuals, a little bit like a governor does on your car. And if you've got a governor on your car, no matter how hard you hit the gas, you can't go any faster. Well, similarly, if you're limited by discomfort, limiting beliefs, you've developed a culture of that in your business, in your community, or your family, no matter how hard you work, no matter how many things you learn and take in, you're not really going to get any breakthrough results. You're going to end up with something more or less about what you had last year. There's research, I think it's Norwegian research actually, that showed avoiding, denying, and surviving discomfort. I call them the discomfort defaults, what we naturally will do personally and professionally, left people unable to act in accordance with the knowledge they already had. That means I know what to do to grow my business, or I know what to do to be healthier, but discomfort stops you. And I had this epiphany around this, like, wow, all the information's there. Everybody in theory could know what to do or read about what to do or learn about what to do from others. It's really this discomfort that's in the way. So what I do is I work with leadership teams to first, articulate and understand what is that discomfort? What are some of those limiting beliefs about how you're viewing the world? Because you didn't come out of the womb with them. You know, never was there a baby born where they're like, oh, here's beautiful baby boy Sterling Hawkins, and he's going to be terrified to speak in public, right? Like that doesn't happen. It's a clean slate when you come out. That discomfort started somewhere. And for leadership teams and individuals, and I keep going back and forth between the individuals and companies, because companies only grow as much as their leaders are willing to. As we can articulate where that discomfort came from, get to the root of it, and start to set it aside, that's what's going to start to reconnect, like we were talking about earlier, reconnect those leaders to what's most important to them as human beings. And that is a place to run a business from, an unstoppable, authentic place that's not subject to circumstances, that is true because it's true for you. Did I answer that? That was a
Yeah, you
long-winded
did
way of
answer that.
answering your
You
question,
did
I
answer
think.
that, and it makes me think. So, have you ever started working with a leadership team and found that You needed to change people's positions because they weren't in the position they were supposed to be. In other words, they weren't happy where they were, so maybe they needed to do something else in the company.
Well, that's not something that I would diagnose, right? I'm going to unleash, or maybe better said, free people from their limiting beliefs and their fears. And it's from there that it will be obvious to them and everybody in the room if they're not in the right position. And that does happen a fair amount, but I'm not an expert in most all of the industries that I work in. I am an expert in going after some of those limiting beliefs. And once you set those aside, all of a sudden, like, people are having all these epiphanies, like, wait a minute, I love this other role. I want to do this other thing. Here's what this business is about, right? Uh-huh. And so it very much comes from the leadership teams themselves versus me saying, you know, here's my prescription for you. Mm-hmm. They get a chance to discover what's possible for themselves. And it's the most beautiful thing. My actual work in those things is very little. They're doing all the heavy lifting.
It sounds exciting and almost like an unleashing, like,
yeah,
unbinding, like, oh, all of a sudden they're autonomous and they can move around and they can explore. Because sometimes it's so easy to get stuck in the same thing you're doing all the time.
It is. And I'll give you a powerful example from a friend of mine. His name's, this is a more of a personal story, but I think everybody can relate to it on both levels. His name's William Hung. And if that name rings a bell, he became famous because he sang Ricky Martin's She Bangs on American Idol so poorly, he instantly went viral. Do you remember him? Does that ring a bell at all?
No, but it sounds... That would be a terrible thing to go viral for singing the worst.
Right. And, you know, when I saw it, it was probably 20 years ago now, something like that, maybe a little bit less. I saw it, I just laughed with everybody else and kind of moved on. And I actually met William Hung at a TED Talk I gave a couple of years back. And he's like, Sterling, you don't know what it's like to have the whole world laugh at you. Like, literally the entire world laughing at you. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're right. I never thought about it from that perspective. He's like, I literally want to go crawling under my bed and never come out. And I'm like, oh, I know that feeling, right? Where you feel like the whole world has this perspective and you're not good enough. You're not smart enough. You're not resilient enough. Like, you're just not enough. And he hit this rock bottom point. And I think it would have been very easy for him to kind of disappear from the public eye, maybe get a job that was relatively quiet, although it was hard for him to find anything, go anywhere with people that didn't recognize him because it was everywhere. But what he did is, these are my words, not his, he went after that discomfort. He said, there's some opportunity, there's some purpose in this pain, and I can't see that yet, but I'm going to go after it. Mm-hmm. So he started picking up the phone, and some people, just people that wanted to laugh at him or friends that kind of made a joke of it. But there were other calls coming in that invited him to sing at their parties, to sing at their events. And what he turned that into was a whole singing career. He released his own album, and he even got to sing on stage with Ricky Martin himself. I think it was in Las Vegas. Right? Like it's just crazy. There's strength in every weakness. There's power in every problem. We just need to have the courage to look that problem in the face and open ourselves to it, just like William did.
Wow.
It's cool, right?
That is really cool. That is really,
really
cool.
Yeah. Well, and since I know you've got a lot of business listeners here, I don't want to detract from it, but I've got a business example for you as well, if you'd like.
Sure. Yeah, let's hear it.
Yeah. Well, everybody knows Richard Branson, CEO of Virgin Group now. In the early 90s, he was the CEO of Virgin Atlantic, the airline company transporting people primarily from the UK and the US. And he wasn't quite as big as he is now. And the flights were important. The business was critical. And everybody would probably guess the airline business is quite expensive to be in. And he wanted to retrofit his planes with all the latest and greatest in entertainment, right? This is back early 90s, before we had tablets and phones and everything else. in front of us on an airplane was just a seat back. And this was a big problem for him. You know, and all of us can relate to business problems where you're like, wait a minute, I don't have the cash for this thing. Or maybe I don't have the time for this thing. Having those seats retrofitted with the latest and greatest entertainment system was something like a 10 million pound proposition. Early 90s was not a great economic time. Couldn't find the money, called banks, called in favors, couldn't find it. Now, our natural inclination is to shrink from problems right then, like that, right? If I don't have 100% of the budget I need, well, maybe I could get 90% or 80%, or I can do a piece of it, right? He could have very easily said, well, let's retrofit one plane. We got enough money for that. And then, well, we'll do the others later. But he didn't. He used which I think one of the best ways to find what's uncomfortable, to find the purpose and the pain or the opportunity and the challenge, is he created a bigger problem. A bigger problem like William Hung level of things. He said, okay, well, if I can't find the 10 million pounds to retrofit these planes, what if I buy an entirely new fleet of planes? A 4 billion pound proposition, like many times larger than just putting the screens in. And he called up Boeing and he said, hey, if I buy a whole new fleet of jets, will you throw in the entertainment system? He said, yes. Called up Airbus, same thing. And so at a point in time where he could not find 10 million pounds to retrofit those planes, he found 4 billion pounds to do it. Again, strength in every weakness. You just have to have the courage to go after it. And sometimes just create a bigger problem to see where you might need to use that courage.
Wow. So I want to hear the shark story. I want to share the shark.
Yeah. Well, I'll just emphasize again, I'm not some like thrill seeker, adrenaline junkie. I'm just not. I would like to be. I've got a lot of admiration for those people that are like on those squirrel suits jumping out of helicopters. It's just not me. Like those things scare me in really profound kind of ways. So the shark dive was a step into that unknown and the uncomfortable. And I was down, I was actually speaking in Cape Town. And they wanted a 15-minute presentation. So I had tons of time on my hands when I'm down there. And what is Cape Town known for? Shark diving. And if you've ever seen Shark Week on Discovery Channel, most of that footage is from a place called Seal Island off the shore in Cape Town. So that's where I'm going to go. And we get out there. It wasn't really a tourist thing. Like, we were the only shark diving boat. There were a couple maybe local fishing boats. It was just us, all these seals on Seal Island. It's appropriately named. And us. And I get bored after a while because we're sitting out there. We got out there at like 4 a.m. and then 5 a.m., 6 a.m. Then the sun's starting to come up and then it's starting to get hot. And the thing with being around all those seals, it doesn't smell very good. So it's not like a pleasant place to be. Like, the scenery is gorgeous, but you're kind of like, where are the sharks? Like let's go here. And I had given up. I thought, you know, we had been here 6 or 7 hours. This must be why I signed all that paperwork that says if we don't see a shark, I don't get my money back. I'm out, right? Like, take me home. I'm bored. So I totally resigned, which I think most people can relate to in some way, right? Maybe not shark diving, but you like wait long enough for something to happen, the perfect market condition, the perfect relationship. Like, you're waiting. And you're like, this is never going to happen. Like, I give up. That's where I was. So I'm sitting with my feet in the shark cage, having a sandwich. Again, totally resigned. And I hear all of this screaming. And I can't really make it out at first. But what I realized very quickly is that this turns out to be like a 16-foot shark has jumped out of the water and is hanging from the chum, the bait that we were using to lure them in. And this is all happening, I kid you not, 18 inches from where I'm sitting. Right? Like, discomfort does not begin to describe the fear that I felt. Like, I froze. I literally couldn't move. And I do start to realize what people are saying. They're saying, get in the water. And I'm thinking, what are you, crazy? Like, I want to be back in the boat. I want to be back on dry land. This has been fantastic. This is a little too close for comfort. And thankfully, having gone halfway around the world in this incredible experience, in this incredible place, I didn't listen to that little voice in my head that said, don't turn back. It's dangerous. In this case, it really was a little bit. But I listened to them and I jumped. And it was one of the most incredible experiences of my entire life. Funny enough, on the other side of fear.
Wow. So how close did you get to that shark in the water? Is he...
they'll like come up and they'll bump the cage that we were in. It was a metal cage. I think I may have touched one's nose. Like they're really close.
Wow.
And I think on Discovery Channel, you always see them like jumping out of the water and going after these seals, and they do that. But when you're underwater with them, they seem very placid, more curious than anything else. Kind of like, what is this thing in my habitat? And where is that food I thought I was promised?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an amazing experience you had.
Really was. Really, really was. But I think there's a lot of times like we get on that precipice of some breakthrough, some incredible experience, some life-changing, business-changing event. And same thing, like everything in our head is like, don't stop, go back. It's dangerous. You shouldn't do that, right?
Uh-huh.
And it really is. In this case, I had kind of my de facto street gang yelling at me to get in the water. But that's where having those people around you become hugely powerful. Because they're going to keep you going through at those hardest moments when you need them most. I think about it as like, it's always darkest before dawn. Mm-hmm. You always feel the most discomfort right before you're going to break through it.
I've heard that about climbing Kilimanjaro, one of the highest mountains.
Yeah.
People say, just when you want to give up.
Yeah.
Like if you just, you're almost there, but you don't realize that you're almost there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's on deck for me, by the way. I was supposed to go during the pandemic. Maybe I'll go later this year. But yeah, I think Kilimanjaro is amazing. And I've heard similar stories.
Exactly. So this podcast and my book is about, you know, visualizing happiness, finding joy.
Yeah.
What's the best way to find joy in life?
I think like most things, maybe I think a little bit backwards about this. I think about it less as finding joy and more realizing that that joy comes from you. The joy is right here. Oftentimes it's just slowing down, setting things aside, connecting with what's most important in this particular moment. And the joy for me just starts to arise. I think we get so caught up in like the things to do, like the text messages to send and the emails and the goals to hit and making dinner and taking care of family, fulfilling obligations. Like there's all these things, these finite things that we have to do. And well, we do have to do many of those things, but we get disconnected from, what German-American theologian, philosopher Paul Tillich would call your ultimate concern. Things like love, joy, gratitude, and peace. Things that somewhat ironically, no matter what happens in the world, can never be taken away from you.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get connected to those things, you get connected to that joy, that happiness, that peace, whatever it is for you, I found that it transforms anything standing in your way. It's like the uncomfortable and the uncertain by connecting with those ultimate things become breakthrough results. It feels like magic if it hadn't seen it hundreds of times.
Yeah, it does sound like magic. So just a personal question, what gives you the most joy in your life at this point?
It's being able to have conversations like this. You know, I have been through some pretty dark places, especially when that company fell apart, but many times since. And there was a real loss, or maybe better said, disconnection from purpose. And I was embarrassed. So I pulled back from people and communities. I pulled back from support. And I hit a rock bottom for me in a pretty major way. And if I share just maybe just one glint of inspiration or a little bit of wisdom that maybe hits somebody in a certain way that either prevents them from sinking that low or gives them some kind of pathway to reach an even higher level of success compared to where they are, like, that to me is not just joyful, but for me, it's a life well spent. Like, that's what my life's about.
Beautiful. I love that.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you for, you know, having this conversation and giving me a little bit of a platform to talk with all of your incredible listeners.
Right. Now, if people wanted to actually connect with you or have you come as a speaker, how do they connect with you? Do you have a website, social media? What's the best way?
All the things. My website is sterlinghawkins.com. You can learn about my work there, the speaking there. You can also see a little bit about the No Matter What community and see some of the incredibly inspiring things people are up to personally and professionally. I'd invite anybody that likes to join and become part of it. It doesn't cost anything, by the way. And there aren't too many Sterling Hawkinses out there. So you can search Sterling Hawkins on social media, and I'm on just about all of them, including TikTok, but I'm not dancing there, at least yet.
Okay. Yeah, me either.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast today and for all your wisdom. And you really got me. Sometimes when I was listening and asking questions, I was getting a little lost in what you were saying because my mind was going, the possibilities were opening up.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's keep in touch. You'll have to keep me posted how things are going. And I'd love to hear from you and anybody that's listened in here. It makes my day when I hear from folks.
Thanks. I have one last question before we finish. What is your best advice on living an incredible, amazing life?
Oh, it's my mom's advice. The way out is through. The way out is always through. We just have to go through no matter what.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sterling.
Thank you, Kimberly. Appreciate you.
Yeah, we'll talk to you again soon.